call recording on.
Hello, this is James Woosley from WoosleyCoaching.com, and tonight I've got a guest caller that I wanted to introduce to everybody as we prepare for our next Financial Peace University class at First Baptist North Mobile in Saraland, Alabama. Of course, there's classes all over the country, so you can go to DaveRimsey.com/FPU and get more information on that. But I want to introduce Max Dempsey, and Max is a pastor and a friend of mine. And we were introduced a couple of years ago when he was going through some tough financial situations. And by applying some of Dave Ramsey's FPU principles and just digging into to trying to turn things around, he's made quite a recovery. He's not all the way there yet, and he's got quite a story. So, Max, won't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your story and where you were and how you got there?
Great. Well, James, it's great to be with you. And, yeah, we met under some of the hardest times of my life ever. My wife and I have been married. It'll be 17 years in December. We have 6 children and 1 on the way. And
congratulations.
Yes, thank you. And at any rate, we'd made a lot of the typical mistakes that that couples made early in our marriage, just through some credit card debt, not exorbitant at the time, but definitely some foolish mistakes. I have to also say a lot of the debt that we had acquired had a lot to do with our type of ministry. I spent 6 years in itinerant evangelism and a lot of plane tickets, a lot of gas, that sort of thing. And there were a number of times I just simply wasn't reimbursed when I'd go to speak at a church or to rally or that sort of thing. That's just the nature of that ministry at times. Probably our biggest mistake, we built a house and we needed to add on to it a few years later. I had taken out a home equity loan based on the current prices of materials and was going to do the work myself because I have some construction experience. Mm-hmm. And this was when things just really began to come unglued in the Middle East and our involvement as a nation in that. And so the price of everything just went sky high. And on the tail end of our work project, it became apparent that the money we had borrowed enough to do the addition onto the house. We also just wiped out our credit card debt with that equity loan. And we found out it wasn't going to be enough, and instead of going back to the bank or just putting more of the project on hold, you know, I was in the zone of getting everything done and finished off what we were doing with plastic. And
Dave really talks about the debt snowball, but you kind of used the reverse in that. It kind of snowballed on you, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And got through with all that. We were, of course, living from paycheck to paycheck. Our church was really going through a unique experience as well. Our building had burned to the ground. It was a 60-year-old building. The church was running about 140, 150 in worship at the time. We were completely wiped out as a church of our facilities. We met in a high school for 2.5 years and experienced some pretty extensive growth during that time. It really catapulted us forward as a church, but ran into some issues after we went through a building project. Our church went through a $4 million building project, and we moved in, and about 4 months later, I was dismissed by vote of the church, not on any moral grounds or anything like that, but definitely on some differences of opinion regarding leadership and scripture itself. But at any rate, my severance package amounted to 30 days pay and 30 days insurance, and my wife was pregnant with our 6th at the time. And so our barely sustainable situation, because we had not put an emergency fund in place, because we were living, you know, not even probably within our means, probably just beyond our means, we immediately ended up in a situation that was very dire. And so we are now part of another ministry. a brand new church with people who love us. We are not in the position financially that we were in before all this started. And James, when we met you, we didn't even have any idea what we were going to make, or how we were going to make it. And one of the
you were kind of a part-time trial basis or something or other like that, wasn't it? Paying out a little as they could.
It was. The church that we were becoming a part of was brand new. The passion to start a brand new ministry, not to start a split off, but just to start a brand new work altogether, was in us and in a number of people there. And at the time, we had very little clarity of direction. The church was literally just giving a love offering each week to help sustain us, and we were so, you know, grateful for their graciousness. But the truth is, we had no idea what we would make from week to week at the time that we met you. Probably the most significant thing financially, I'll talk about our relationship, our marriage in just a little bit, but financially, probably the most significant thing I learned in that moment was, okay, here are the things you don't do. You don't fail to make your house note. You don't fail to keep food on your table. You don't fail to make your car note. You live to fight another day when you put up your four walls, I think is the way Dave Ramsey puts it.
Right, and I remember we talked about that exactly when I met with you and Danya, and, you know, take care of these are the priorities, and these are the things we take care of first, and forget about the credit cards.
Exactly.
Just let them go.
You know, it's almost as if I was waiting for someone to say that, because I think one of the things that we face, and I think a lot of people face, is credit card debt is very emotional. And credit card collectors or collection agencies, they really know how to make you feel terrible about missing that, you know, $300 credit card payment or whatever. Whereas the house payment, you know, the mortgage company, they don't say anything. You just end up in a foreclosure. And so, I think I read a statistic somewhere that as many as 60% of the people who go for financial counseling are up to date on MasterCard, but are 2 months behind on their house note or something to that effect.
I don't know the statistics, but yeah, so absolutely, people will get their priorities out of whack because of that emotional push from the credit card companies. Where the mortgage company has an asset against you; they can come take your house, but all the credit card companies can do is threaten.
Exactly. And it's not that we didn't want to pay them off. I mean, we want to take care of all of that, but it really brought some relief, and we were able to look at, this is what we have to do to make it to the next day. And, you know, people are going to get mad. Companies are going to get mad. But that's okay. Let them get mad. It's better that they get mad than that we become homeless or that our children, you know, go without food. And so that really, James, that was just huge. That gave us a tremendous perspective. It allowed us to get up the next day knowing what we had to do. If we had $100 come in, we knew what that $100 had to go to. It was our first step in, as I think Ramsey puts it, spending your money before you get it. And so we were able to. Well, yeah, right. We're working with a budget now. Our budget was very simple at the time. You know, we had a very limited amount of money coming in, and we had four places it had to go, and that was it. I'm thankful that our cars were paid off, and it has just been amazing. I have worked on these vehicles over and over again. I'm probably a Chevrolet mechanic expert by now, but my Suburban has 230,000 miles on it. But in the last 2 years, I have not put enough parts on it to amount to even two car payments. And so I always try to put that in perspective. I keep a record of, you know, how much am I spending to upkeep this car versus what would a new car under warranty cost me each month, and it has certainly been worth it not to have that kind of debt. And we're grateful to look back even in those circumstances and to be able to say, by God's grace, I never missed a single house note, wasn't even late. I never missed a home equity loan, not even once. I never missed a car note. I never missed, you know, I never had my power turned off, you know, those sorts of things. And it was good to say, hey, we made it through that. Our credit score has tanked, yes, but it's good to know that we made it through these circumstances, and we're, you know, living to fight another day and pressing on.
Right. Now I remember, I don't remember some of the details as far as numbers, but you guys were in the process of selling a house, selling the house that you had done the home equity loan on, and
yes.
You made some pretty steep sacrifices to work your way through this, and you're certainly not all the way there yet, but give people a perspective of where you were and maybe describe, you know, where your bottom was or where you turned around and realized, we can't do this on our own. This isn't working. We need some help.
Yeah, absolutely. We were trying to juggle finances around and screen the calls. The whole situation was stressful. We ended up even turning our landline off because the phone would ring and we would have to race the kids to the phone because, you know, we had to explain to them, don't answer the phone.
We normally have to do that anyway, don't we? But we certainly don't want them picking up when it's a collector.
Right. You know, it's funny, if you have the money in hand, you don't mind receiving those phone calls. It's when you don't have the money in hand that you really try to screen that. But not so much for that sake, but just for economy's sake, we ended up doing away with our landline and going strictly to cell phones, which has saved us a pile of money. We've followed all kinds of tips and advice from online and other sorts of things just to save money on that end. As far as, you know, how bad things got, we were not facing a foreclosure, but to be honest, James, I'm not perceptive enough. I'm not foreseeing enough to know that the market was going to tank. But we sold that house just in the nick of time. We would have really been up a creek if we had just waited on that house. For one, I think we would have gone in the hole enough. We would have started missing house payments, and that would have been a disaster. Or we would have sold the house after the market took such a crash, and we would have gotten next to nothing for it. But
God's providence starts to show in the timing of getting dismissed and setting all these things in place. But
it really is.
I mean, that looking backwards.
Absolutely. Now, I am committed to, you know, putting my cards on the table here. I made another mistake, actually against your advice, despite your advice. But the other mistake that I made, I was just totally convinced that we were going to have to live somewhere. I'm not sure that's such an outrageous thought, but what we did when we sold the house is we bought a piece of property because we saw the price of land going up. Your advice to us was pay off your debt and go rent. What's so funny is, you know, we spent almost 3 years just absolutely bent on making our idea work. And now we're at the point the land's for sale and we're renting. So I can honestly say I'm more at peace about our prospects than I've ever been. I'm renting a house that I know I will make the payment each month. I know I will do that. I know that we will press on. I'm in a church that's growing. We are seeing more and more open doors. I have a background in gymnastics, competitive gymnastics, and trampoline. I was hired on as the head trampoline coach at Planet Gymnastics. That's bringing a little bit of extra money in. I coach a couple of cheerleading squads. That's helping us out. I get a construction job every once in a while. That's helping us out. Somehow I got back in the loop of available speakers for youth rallies and men's conferences and that sort of thing. So doing a little bit of that when I'm not, you know, on days that I wouldn't have to be at my church anyway. And so I'm doing some extra speaking. We're seeing that take place. And so it's really cool. You know, one of the things you and I talk about, it's kind of neat how things start to work out in your favor when you just start obeying the Lord and what His Word says about finances. Now, I'm not just talking about the tithe. As one person put it, the tithe is the floor, not the ceiling. It's not the, it's not the top of all that you need to do. It's the bottom. You know, if you do nothing else, right, tithe. But just seeking and moving in the direction of a life without payments. The conclusion I came to, we had prayed about the land. We had prayed about building on it. Because our credit score had tanked, we couldn't borrow the money to build on it. You know, we were facing all these things, and I kept praying about it, and I said, Lord, just tell me what you want us to do. Eventually, we just took our hands off the property and just said, God, whatever you want us to do, we'll do it. And the Lord just directed me back to His Word. And, you know, James, there's not a verse in Scripture that says, thou shalt own land and build thyself a house upon it. I mean, there's nothing in the Word about that. The Bible says don't worry about what you're going to eat, drink, or what you're going to wear, but it doesn't say that Max is entitled to 5 acres and a nice house. But what the Word does tell me is, owe no man anything except the gospel. And so my wife and I came to a conclusion that we would pursue the shortest path to debt-free living. And because of the income that we have, I'm still not able to, you know, wake up some of the old debts like I'd like to and just wipe them out. We're having to pay cash for this baby. It's amazing. You have to be in a lot worse shape than I am to, you know, get Medicare and that sort of thing. We make just too much to get Medicare, but not near enough to, or Medicaid, but not near enough to get decent health insurance. And so we'll be paying cash for this baby. I have a daughter in braces. And so there's some expenses that just have to take priority right now over sleeping debt. But the land is on the market. It's on the market for a fair price. It's not a giveaway price, but it's not something we would make money off of. But if the land sells, we'll be able to address those debts that way. Or if our financial situation just simply changes, we're committed to taking whatever excess we have and bringing those debts up one at a time to wipe those things out.
There's some themes I'm hearing kind of in what you're talking about, and one of them is sacrifice.
Yeah.
I mean, you sacrificed a house that you guys really liked that house, and it fit your large family pretty well.
It was 2,400 square feet. It was a 5-bedroom, 3-bath house.
And if I remember right, you weren't renting a place when you first left that house, were you?
No, I wasn't. We still laugh about this. James, we moved out of that house, and we had not quite bought the land yet, but we literally had nowhere to go. And I bought an RV. I bought a 34-foot travel trailer, and my wife and I and our 6 children moved into that RV, and we lived at campgrounds for 7 months while I cleared the land and, you know, spent a few $1,000s having a road built and that sort of thing, and all for the sake of just putting the land back on the market again all this time later. But, yeah, for 7 months, we lived in an RV.
Man, that sounds like a title of a book, 7 months, 6 kids in an RV. so that's a sacrifice, though. I mean, and it really takes sacrificing to win. It takes giving up some possessions or some comfort to change things, whether you're digging out of a hole or you just want to climb a different mountain you know, you're at the base of. So that's an incredible sacrifice, and you're still doing it, trying to work through all this stuff. The other thing I'm hearing, certainly beyond just faith, but is a sense of honor and a sense of, you know, a healthy kind of pride of wanting to be true to what you signed up for. You know, you are admitting that you made the mistakes. There's a personal responsibility aspect to this. And even though, you know, we say, okay, don't pay the credit cards, pay for your house, pay for your food, pay for those kind of things first, there's a commitment to go back and clean this up later.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly how and when that's going to happen, but it's not like you've declared bankruptcy. And God forbid, you know, people declare bankruptcy, and there's all kinds of reasons for that. There's certainly no admonition here against that. But you're trying to take a very honorable way out of this, even though, guys, Chase, City, whoever, I can't pay you today, but one day, you know, I'll pay you back, or we'll work out a deal or something.
Right. And hopefully we'll do that before they forget about us.
Oh, trust me, they're not going to forget about it.
That's what I'm thinking.
At some point, they do sue, and, you know, right now they're kind of cash-strapped for all this stuff, and at some point they will, and mm-hmm. you know, what will happen is you'll lose that lawsuit because, you know, I owe the money, and the judge will declare it, and then you'll have to work out a deal. But what hopefully can happen is that, you know, and I'm saying this for your situation, for other people that might be listening that are in the same situation, is you go in and you get a little bit of money scraped together, and maybe you owe the smallest one $3,000, and you say, look, I got $1,000. You know, would you settle this in full?
Exactly.
And a lot of times they'll take that because they're looking at it, and over the past 2 years they haven't gotten anything from you.
Right.
All of a sudden they get a chance to get $1,000 and say, fine, take it. They write it off. and you're free and clear. Now, there's some steps, and we won't go into all of that, but you want to be careful how exactly you go through that process of doing that. But one at a time, you can wake these up and kill it, and one day you will be free of that. This is a really, you know, when we get back to the spiritual side of things, it's what we would call a valley experience. And I think, you could describe it probably better, but you've been to the darkest part of the valley. You're not all the way out of it. What would you say, you know, to somebody that's kind of maybe further behind you, that they're feeling that sense of, you know, they're at the bottom, or maybe they even feel like they're at the bottom, they're just still falling. What are, you know, two or three, four things maybe that you would recommend that they'd learn and do to start getting a sense of, you know, what Dave Ramsey calls financial peace?
Absolutely. James, there's a few things, and I'll address them, a couple on just on their personal, from the sense of their personal worth. One of the things that all of this taught me that I had to discover early in the game is that making financial blunders does not make you an evil person. It doesn't change who you are in Christ. It doesn't change your value to God. Yes, the Lord wants you to be obedient to Him, but there is grace to restore you when you make this kind of mistake, just like there's grace to restore you in any other area. And so the first thing I would say to someone who maybe they can't quite see my taillights because I'm just a couple of hills ahead of them is, the first thing I would say is get a clear perspective of who you are in Christ, that you are still cherished by God. You are still one of His treasures. You are still usable by Him. It is a very embarrassing thing to get in a financial jam. I will say that it is a very shameful thing. I am so grateful for my wife who forced me, she called and made the appointment, and forced me to go sit down first with Ed Litton at North Mobile. And that was one of the hardest things. As a pastor, I had gone to lunch with Pastor Ed a number of times, and I really did not want Ed to see this side of me. I really didn't want him to see the part of Max that had failed. You know, he and I would sit down and swap war stories, or we'd swap one-liners, or we'd swap illustrations that we used in a sermon, or we would swap stories about, you know, what God was doing in our church. And for the longest time, I was able to control my own press releases to people like Ed Litton. But when my wife said, look, you are going to go sit down with him and with me, and we're going to come to some kind of conclusion. We're going to do something about this. That was a very hard thing to do. And I just have to say, Ed Litton is one of the most merciful, one of the most compassionate people I've ever met in my life. And that was one of the first things that he said to me. He said, you're not an evil slime bucket. You are a man of God who has fallen, and God's going to help you get back up. And that meant the world to me. I was able to go back to the mic at my church and preach again and hold my head up and press on and walk on. And so that's the first thing that I'd have to say to anyone who's in that boat. You know, you're not a world-class idiot. I tell people I'm not a complete idiot. There are some parts that are missing. but the truth is, it doesn't change who you are. And it doesn't change your value. This has been an incredible learning experience. I would have loved to have learned it by simply reading it. But I can tell you, I believe in the principles of Financial Peace University, not because I read it, but because I experienced it. And because I know what a financial nightmare is, I appreciate financial peace all the more. The second thing that I would have to say to this person is, or to anyone that's listening, be painfully honest with your spouse. James, the most hurtful thing that was said through all of this was when my wife, who was not even aware of how much I had messed up our finances, much of the charging and credit card things. She admits that, you know, she probably turned a blind eye to some of it, but the truth is I wanted to be able to give her all the things that she wanted. I wanted to be able to take her out to eat anytime she wanted to go, and I had lost my ability to say no to her. She was not a demanding wife. I was just a very cowardly husband. And so I put us in this mess through, you know, finishing the house project or whatever it was. But because I had hidden the bills, because I was screening the phone calls and just intercepting so much of that, she was not aware of what kind of mess we were in. And so in the midst of all of this, when we sat down with all the paperwork and I just put all the cards on the table, she looked up at me and she said, "Is there anything else you're not telling me? Is there anything else going on in your life? Is there somebody? Is there anything? Is there a habit? Is there an addiction that I don't know about?" And James, I have never been unfaithful to my wife. I've never even had a dangerous friendship. I've never even had a close call. I have never done a single thing in our marriage to jeopardize her trust. But when I allowed our finances to be this dark, locked up closet that I did not let her be a part of, it eroded trust in our marriage. And if someone is listening, I guarantee you more than likely, if they're in a financial jam and they haven't reached that point of being honest with one another, either the husband or wife is probably carrying the brunt of this load and is probably feeling guilty about their own financial management, money management, and is probably keeping some things from their spouse. And I'd have to say the most important thing you could do right now is to be painfully honest with your spouse. Once Donnie and I did that, and once we got through that, she and I open the mail together. We look at the checkbook together. We talk about how broke we are together. We get creative with buying groceries together. We stand together in this. And the really cool thing is about a year and 3 months after we met you, God had done so much in our marriage. She and I actually co-wrote and co-taught a marriage retreat for another church. And so this has been an amazing experience. I can say because of the financial debacle that we went through, my marriage is stronger now than it's ever been. And my wife and I have a tremendous respect for each other and love for each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, some people will be listening and, man, I just can't do that. I can't tell her, I can't tell him about this credit card debt I've racked up or whatever it might be. It's really like a wound that's infected and it's only going to get worse. But, and it's painful to expose it. It's painful to put the peroxide, hydrogen peroxide or whatever, you know, in it and clean out the wound, but it's the only way it's going to heal. And so, you know, you talk about eroding trust. You'd already been doing that. When you took the step of telling her and being completely honest, that's when you started building trust again.
Absolutely.
And that's huge. So, you know, thank God, you know, for your wife, to be a true Proverbs 31 woman, you know, to walk with you through this and to work out with it.
Something else, James.
Yeah.
One of the things that was helpful in that, you know, despite that huge blunder, and the truth is, it's sin. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's not, you know, it's not a oops. It's a sin to live that way. One of the things that helped us is we were in the right environment to be able to face this. And I would have to encourage, you know, if there is someone listening that's saying, "There's no way I can do this." Sometimes timing has to do with it. Someone once said the only difference between a foul ball and a home run is timing. But the other thing is make sure you're in the right place to do it. Donnie and I, one of the places we faced our demise together was in the presence of Ed Litton and then in the presence of you when we sat down and honestly looked at our income and our budget and our debt and that sort of thing. Having a third person there who was a calming voice, and who kept sharp objects away from my wife, you know, having someone there who could be a voice of reason and say, "Hey, look, this is good that you guys are talking about this. I know this hurts right now, but this is actually a good thing." That, you know, it kind of, it woke us up, brought us back into perspective. it was an emotional experience, but it was not something that we got lost or drowned in our emotions. And so having the right context for sharing this information and having the right timing means a lot. Means a whole lot.
Oh yeah. I mean just having that third party, you know, like you said, it keeps the knives from flying or the plates from flying, but it keeps those emotions in check, because, you know, it's like revving a car engine. You know, you just press the gas pedal and you blow the engine. And that's what you can do when you start yelling with your spouse and you know, people handle that conflict in different ways, but there's damage done. And so if you have somebody to walk with you through that, whether it's marriage counseling, which does not mean your marriage is failing, you know, you need to go to marriage counseling just to help improve things, or financial counseling or career counseling or coaching. And it doesn't always have to be a, you know, the psyche kind of thing going on. You know, that's why I'm a coach. I'm not a counselor. I'm certainly not a pastor. I don't think I could be a pastor. there's things that pastors have to do that I'm just not gifted at. But coaching, you know, is something that I love, because I can sit down with people and I can hear their stories and I can offer that outside perspective and say, what about this? Or have you thought about this? Or I think he's really trying to say this to you, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So getting that external, you know, Pastor Ed is an incredible man of God. And, you know, just relate my side of this story is I used to go running. We used to live in the same neighborhood, and we used to go running every once in a while at night, not as often as I needed to, and he's kept running and I haven't. We just started talking, and I'd been teaching FPU at the church for a couple of years, and I certainly wasn't on the coaching path and started my own business doing that. But he said, look, you know, there's this guy, this guy and his wife, and he's a pastor, and he needs some help, and, you know, maybe you could sit down with him and talk about the financial side of those things. And I think we only met two or three times other than, you know, occasionally in Walmart, we'd always bump into each other. you know, that was, I had no idea the impact that I had on you guys until, you know, really just recently, a couple weeks ago, whenever we did bump into a Walmart. I think we talked in the produce office for about 45 minutes. There was just so much to catch up on. But, well, this is just incredible. It's an honor for me to have been able to be a part of your recovery. And I, you know, I'm looking forward to all kinds of continued success for you. As you go forward, are there any last thoughts that you've got, you know, either advice for somebody or additional detail in your story that you think might touch someone and encourage them to seek some help or to attend, you know, Financial Peace University,
to get
a start on changing their financial perspective and, you know, hey, guess what? You know, and you went through the FPU materials that we gave you. It's not just about the money. It's about the relationship, and it's about your relationship with God and how you handle your money. Any last thoughts from you on that?
Well,
I asked you way too much at once, but
really, in our second hour, but one of the things that I have to say is definitely the listener needs to sit down and go through the FPU material. First of all, it's a whole lot of fun. Dave Ramsey's extremely entertaining, and to hear some of the stories.
It's not just for people in problems, people who just want to do better.
It really is.
You can learn a lot from it. So
we're seeing that, you know, we're changing our approach to just life in general. One of the books that he recommended was The Millionaire Next Door. It's an older book, but the concept is still the same, and it talks about to live like a millionaire. People get the wrong idea. They think living like a millionaire means you're going out and having all these extravagant meals and buying these fancy cars and all of this nice furniture and these big houses. But the study that they did on the vast majority of millionaires is they found that these people actually inflict upon themselves a much lower standard of living than what they could afford. And so they leave that margin, that gap between what they live on and what they actually make. And so one of the things that we're learning, and it comes in really handy for getting out of debt, but also just for the sake of building wealth, we were able to put $1,000 in our emergency fund pretty quickly, simply by changing our lifestyle and changing our habits and how we spend money and how we go about our day-to-day routine and our budgets. By doing these things, by making these sacrifices that you're talking about, we can see it one of two ways. We can see it as, okay, we can't afford to do anything nicer, so we're going to have to live like paupers. Or we can say, you know what, we're just living like millionaires because this is what they do. You know, our margin's not quite as wide as theirs is, but we're living like millionaires. We're watching every dime. We're being very careful with the money that the Lord's given us. One of the neat things, James, is through all of this, we learned about taking on every opportunity to make more, to continue to give to the Lord generously and to give to His work. James, in the midst of some of the darkest times, after meeting with you, after taking on these principles, after getting some sense of peace and security, I actually went out and worked some extra jobs, and also people gave to support, but we raised $7,000 to send my wife and daughter to Uganda last summer for a mission trip. And that was exciting, one, to just, you know, see my 12-year-old and my wife go and be a part of the Lord's work that way, but also to just look at this and go, you know what, life continues to go on. We're still able to do some of the things that we did before. To be in a financial jam is not the end of the world. I had a pastor tell me one time, she said, the bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the turn. And James, that's where we were. There was a bend in the road, but it wasn't the end of the road for us because we did make the turn. We live differently. We think differently about money now, and it's been an exciting thing. So I highly recommend it. The Financial Peace materials, go to the class, listen to the CDs, apply the principles. Some things, to be honest, we've had to tweak for our personal needs or for our personal approach. You know, if we found out we're both free spirits or we're both nerds, you know, that changes the way you look at your budgets and that sort of thing. But the basic principle of living beneath your means and striving to become debt-free and keeping your four walls up has been really refreshing. You made a statement. I'll close with this. You made a statement when we were standing in the protest aisle the other day. You smiled at me after I told you where we were, and you said your worst-case scenario has changed, hasn't it? And I said, yes, it has. And, James, my worst-case scenario is next month I'll still be in a rental house. I'll still be working two or three different places to press on. I'll still be watching every dime that we make. I'll still be paying myself just a few dollars, maybe $40, $50 a week or every 2 weeks to set back in savings. But that is my worst-case scenario, and that's a far cry from what we thought it would be a couple of years ago. It really is.
You were in a pretty scary place, and that's just incredible, Max. And it just shows, you know, the willingness to work and to sacrifice and to do whatever it takes to provide for your family, to turn things around. You know, that's a testament to your character. And then on top of that, you know, you're a pastor, and so everybody looks at you and expects you to be perfect. And you know, you're showing a lot of guts to put some of this stuff on the line and share it. I know Pastor Ed is the same way. You know, he talks about the things in his life that are difficult, and you know, it just makes you real. And we forget pastors are real sometimes. So I appreciate you doing that and talking about the class and everything. Well, I just want to give some details in case anybody's listening is interested in taking my Financial Peace University class, which of course I love the instructor. So I think he does a pretty good job after 4 years of doing it. But I have done the class for 4 years, about 12 different classes, mostly at North Mobile, but also at First Baptist Satsuma and at my workplace when I was working in Mississippi. I'm actually working tonight, calling in, you know, we're talking to each other. I'm in Annapolis, Maryland for work after a long day of work. You know, we're getting the opportunity to talk. So, the joy of technology. We can do all this stuff all kinds of different ways. But our class starts on September 27th. That's a Sunday night. We'll typically go from about 4 to about 6 o'clock, get out in time for the Sunday night services. There's a couple of days that are a little different. We'll run right up to Christmas with those classes. There may be a couple of changes, doubling up some classes if we run into some conflicts with Christmas or Thanksgiving. But pretty much every Sunday at 4 o'clock, we'll run that class for 13 weeks. And it is a life-changing class. I don't think it's going to be a large group, so you'll get a lot of personal attention if you need some help. I know some friends of mine are already going to be taking the class, And hopefully we'll get some of our alumni in there to come in and share their stories, folks like you and other people who have either, you know, paid off their house, gotten out of debt, or just gotten that first $1,000 in the bank. And it's really, it's really rewarding to me to see those things. I do this purely as a ministry thing, the financial piece classes. I'm doing some other things and building out the coaching business and doing some other classes and stuff. But at the heart of it really comes back to this financial piece and what it's done in my life. I mean, my wife and I have paid off, gosh, close to $50,000 now.
Wow.
In debt. So we're, you know, we've got a couple of hiccups that we're going through right now at the housing market, but we're going to be done very soon, and on a great path forward. And I just want to share that with people because it's so powerful and it's so magnified in today's environment when, you know, banks are closing and the government's taking over companies, and it's just gotten kind of really crazy because of the whole debt and credit mess. And the people that I was able to teach 4 years ago that got in the right path, they're weathering this storm without any problem. People who are going through this storm right now, well, there's no time like today to start changing, to start making that turn in the road like you're talking about, because the turn's coming. There's going to be things in our lives that we have to adjust course for, and that's God's path, you know, for us. We're going to be on it whether we want to or not. We're going to be dragged kicking and screaming sometimes, and I've certainly experienced that in my life. But I just want to encourage people, you know, go to my website, woosleycoaching.com. You can also go to gulfcoastfpu.com, which is another one of my websites that I'm still building it out. It's still kind of rough around the edges, but we've got some more information about financial peace there, and hopefully we'll get some other classes in the area on that page, on that website as well, to advertise their classes, because there's classes starting all over the place. They're not always in church. If you're not a churchgoer, that's okay. You know, we talk a lot. You know, you're a pastor. We're going to talk a lot about God in this call, obviously. And Dave's principles are biblically based. But it's not a preachy class. It's not, you know, we're not there to throw, you know, holy water on you and exercise your financial demons. We might end up doing that in a different manner just through some education. It really is a lot of fun, and my groups typically get very close and share some pretty intimate things in the class. It's a closed environment. The Vegas rule applies in my classes, but it's just phenomenal to see the change in people, and I can't encourage people enough to sign up for the class. If you don't live in the Mobile area or Sunday night doesn't work for you, there's classes all over the country, practically all over the world. Just go to DaveRamsey.com/FPU, type in your zip code, and you can find classes starting that have already started, that are getting ready to start in your area, and they really are all over the place. Dave's also got resources that you can do the entire thing online. You can just buy the kits. You can buy them through him. You can try it on eBay and get them a little bit cheaper if that works for you too.
Yeah.
But it's great stuff. Dave's been through, you know, some pretty dark places as well, and has climbed back in phenomenal ways with his radio show and TV show and a wonderful family that he's got. I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times, and just a great guy. So,
James, if I could say one thing about the class.
Sure, absolutely.
One encouragement about the class is the Bible says that there is no temptation that is overtaking you but except that which is common to man. When you're in a financial mess, one of the first lies you begin to believe is you begin to think, I must be the only person on planet Earth who has messed up this bad. And one of the things encouraging about just sitting down and talking with somebody else is for somebody to look you in the eye and go, you know, I've either been there or I am there now. And it really makes it a lot easier. Donnie and I were even able to back up and just laugh at ourselves and laugh at some of the mistakes. You and I shared a laugh in Walmart the other night when I mentioned the question that I've asked a number of couples. Have you ever been so depressed about your finances that the only way you could cheer yourself up was to go out to eat on a credit card? And the truth is, I think just about every couple has done that, just been so bummed out about where they were financially that they just felt they owed it to themselves to go out for a steak dinner and put it on the credit card.
That pain with some temporary chemicals from the food and the atmosphere.
It does something for you.
there's a financial hangover when you do that, though.
There really is. But to be around other people, too. Yeah, but to be around other people who have been there or who are in the same boat, and you may feel silly at first trying to apply some of these principles, carrying around an envelope and writing down everything you spend and that sort of thing. But when you know there's other people doing it, and you're able to share stories and brag about how you're able to save money at the grocery store, or you found a cheaper gas station, or you, you know, were able to work extra hours that week or whatever, it really is refreshing and encouraging to know that other people are in this same fight with you, and that you can press on. It makes a difference.
Yeah. I'll just wrap this up. I appreciate everybody listening to the call. I appreciate you, Max, for being on the call. But Dave says a lot of good things. I'm always saying Dave says, but Dave says, you know, broke is normal. Be weird. You got to change the pattern in your life. You don't want to be normal. Normal is broke. Normal
that's
is
right.
That guy that's losing his house or maxed out on credit cards so much that you know he doesn't know which bill to pay next and how to do it. Financial peace is going to help people get through those situations.
Absolutely.
And hey, those millionaires, they can learn a couple of things from Dave too. So I'd love to have some millionaires in my class too, because I'm sure they'd help teach some other principles to the other people in there. So thanks so much, Max. I will see you in Walmart, I guess, at some point.
That's great. Take care,
Dave. Have a good night.
You too, man.